Yeah, that's good.
At least I found it. I don't know where it was.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Okay, if we can take our seat. And first of all, let's thank Taz for his presentation. A lot of good information there.
There you go.
And just a minute to explain the clipboard that's going around. What you signed up for before, if you signed that sheet, was the getting on the email newsletter list. And what Taz is talking about now is actually subscribing to that Creation magazine, and that's that list that's going around now.
Yeah.
So that's just to explain it. So we're going to take some Q&A, and so think about questions you want to ask Taz. But in the meantime, I'm going to ask the two fellows to come forward. One of the ways we support this ministry is through free will offerings. So you can choose to contribute in that way or through the donation box in the back, whatever you feel comfortable doing. And we also have four book resource tables back there that you can take advantage of, because there's a lot of material that will back up what Taz has been saying. And so we have Taz here, and the other person that just stepped was Michael Ord, who's also a weatherman geologist from Montana, and he and Taz are going around speaking on topics for the next few weeks. So if you have a question, I'll bring the mic around.
So is there a mic here?
When they find dinosaur bones, are they fossilized? That is, are they made like when trees turn into stone? Or do dinosaur bones turn into stone as well?
Do you want to answer that? I don't know if this mic's on. Is this, if you got Mike's mic on? You're right. Okay, go for it.
Is it on? Oh, that's
all right.
I don't think I need a mic. The question was, are dinosaur bones fossilized? Yes, most of the time they are, but some of them are not fossilized. There was a T-Rex found. I'm from Bozeman, Montana, where a lot of this research is done at the Museum of the Rockies. There was one T-Rex on display that was not fossilized at all. It was called the Wanko T-Rex. It's since been moved to the Smithsonian. So most of them are fossilized, but some aren't.
What about the ones in the
Antarctica? They find dinosaur bones in a couple places, and I don't know whether they've been changed to stone or they're just bone or not on Antarctica, but some of the ones in Alaska, the North Slope of Alaska, were either lightly fossilized or not fossilized at all. A lot of them on the North Slope of Alaska.
Yeah, so they often...
So it's variable.
Yeah, so... You can get very, the one that Mary Schweitzer did still had the soft tissue and all that within it, so it was a fossil. Fossil is a sign of life, but it wasn't petrified, right? So it hadn't been changed to stone. So sometimes the petrification minerals can go into the bone and they sit in the spaces in the bone. Sometimes the bone material can be dissolved out and it can be replaced. It needs water in order to get the minerals in, and it can occur during the flood and it can occur after the flood, depending on their location.
As you were talking, a thought came to me I haven't ever thought before. Talking about the T-Rex having, I thought you brought out a real good point about the teeth. That's a conclusion that doesn't have any merit. But when God cursed the ground because of sin, could that also have affected the genetic material of animals to cause, as you call it, variation, or I would call it microevolution?
Yeah.
And how much time would that take to go from a plant eater to evolving into a meat eater through physiological change?
Well, probably natural selection and variation and adaptation. Even if the world was not fallen, the animals would have varied and would have moved into different environments which suited them. So it probably didn't have anything to do necessarily with the curse. But there's a number of things that the curse could have done. You know, God said that you bring forth thorns and thistles. A thorn is a modified leaf, so that involves a genetic change. Another thing that could have been is that God could have foresaw that the fall was going to have occurred and designed things for the fall. And then there are certain natural selection can happen after the fall.
So an animal, particularly when food sources are scarce, they can take to becoming carnivorous. And then if they continue that from generation to generation, that could result in changes, physical changes, or physiological changes in the descendants of that animal. So there's a number of possible ways that these things can happen.
Hi. About the red blood cells in the bone, how long do the red blood cells usually last outside the body and in the bone and all that? Did you hear me?
You asked how long the red blood cells can last?
Yeah, like in the bone or just outside the body after the... there's a corpse.
Well, you know that when they take a pint of blood out of you, they got to cool it pretty quick or it starts decaying. They thought it only lasts hundreds or thousands of years until they're finding them not only in several types of dinosaurs, they're finding these red blood cells, and they find them in vessels, which were old blood vessels. I came across an archaeological research report that found red blood cells in some men that were killed in Greece in a war that were buried. They're about 2,000 years old, and they found red blood cells in the bones. So we don't know how they can last thousands of years, but we know that they can because we found them in archaeological human bones 2,000 years old. But 65 million years, 80 million in soft tissue that's not even fossilized, I'd say they have a serious problem with their dating systems.
And they recognize, of course, that's the surprise that comes, and that's why the resistance was originally to acknowledging that it was red blood cells and that it was because of just the incredulity that it could last that long. So a couple of thousand years is a long time, and under most conditions it would degrade. But under some conditions, maybe cold mm-hmm. weather and in the certain ways they're buried, things obviously can last a couple of thousand years. And the flood was 4,500 years ago, so it was from then to now the bones were around. Yes.
In the 1970s, Japanese fishermen dredged some decaying corpse out of the ocean. It looked somewhat like a dinosaur. What do you think that would have been?
Well, originally that was thought to be a plesiosaur. And the Japanese even issued a stamp of this thing as a plesiosaur. And certainly creationists, it's in a lot of places being... claimed to be a plesiosaur, which was discovered by this thing. It was so smelly that they only kept it on the deck a short time and they eventually pushed it back over. They got photographs of it, which are around. There is a lady that is a friend of Creation Ministries who lives in New Zealand, and she used to go for long walks along the beach, a little bit sort of keeping the beach clean and that. And they have basking sharks sometimes die and get washed up on the beach. And she noticed that this basking shark... The way they decay is the material around the necks of these things decays quickly and falls off, and it leaves a big skull and sort of a thin sort of neck, and then a large body, and it looked just like the Japanese plesiosaur that was dug up. And so there's an article in Journal of Creation examining that, and because of the size of the bones in the neck or the vertebrae in the neck of this thing, it's believed that it was a basking shark and not a plesiosaur. So that's our position on it now. I don't know if Mike wants to say anything, but that's where we sort of are.
Question.
Yes?
When Noah's Ark was above the water, how did they breathe since all the trees were covered?
Because the trees create the oxygen or help with the oxygen. Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah.
Well, the trees do help in cleaning the air up and that sort of thing, but I don't think there'd be a big problem with oxygen even, you know, during the flood, because the air is 20% oxygen. It's when we're inside inside a house particularly, the plants can be helpful at certain times in helping to produce a bit of oxygen. So, yeah, I don't think there'd be a problem. I don't know if you'd like to comment on that, but there you go. There's a young lady down. Oh, there's one up the back here, right up the back.
So when was the first fossil found, and what type of fossil was it?
Well, that's a good question. People knew about fossils going back thousands of years. I think the Greeks are aware of fossils. Certainly back in the 1600s, there was a bit of an argument about fossils. And people didn't know what they were, particularly things like we find sharks' teeth and their unusual shape. And people sometimes said that they must be, these fossils must be some sport of the gods having a game and putting these things in the rocks to trick up people. And so it was about, like, the first person in modern times who identified fossils was a guy by the name of Nicholas Steno, and he was from Italy, and he identified shark's teeth. He was very good at anatomy, and he identified shark's teeth in the rocks, and he wrote a little booklet about it. And so that was probably the first time in modern days, 1600s, that fossils have been reported and accepted as being things which were once alive.
So if dinosaurs were all died out and there were none left on the earth, would scientists be able to somehow get a substitute for the missing DNA to bring back dinosaurs?
So you've been watching Jurassic Park, have you?
Yeah.
Do you want to answer that one, Mike?
No, I'll try. First of all, the idea of getting blood from insects in amber, there's too much air movement through amber, and so you can't do it, essentially. And so it was just make-believe that you can find DNA from a mosquito that bit a dinosaur and from the blood of an insect in amber. That's the Jurassic Park idea. But it's just what Hollywood fantasy, as they typically are.
I think the DNA of a dinosaur, DNA of things, decays and degrades so quickly that I don't think you could ever really pull the. This is just my personal opinion. I don't think you could ever sort of resurrect the DNA of a dinosaur. Now, what they might be able to do is they might be able to take the egg of an animal like a chicken or a cat or something, just take the egg, and they might be able to introduce a little bit of dinosaur DNA that they get from somewhere. I don't know. They might be able to do that. And then it might be a slightly mutated chicken that comes out. And they then say, look, we've cloned a dinosaur. So when they make these claims, you just got to be careful. But I don't think you'd ever be able to sort of resurrect a dinosaur by putting an egg, getting an egg and getting the DNA. It would be too degraded, in my view.
I might add one thing. There's been claims of DNA from dinosaurs as well as other ancient organisms. But the latest research indicates it's probably contamination that they measured, and so they really didn't get DNA from a dinosaur. Mm.
It's a good story. Yes.
So what do you think, where do you think the most, areas where they're, the red blood cells have been found from the dinosaurs is, for example, Costa Rica, Washington?
Okay, where's the most areas where the dinosaurs have been found where they've got red blood cells? Okay, I think...
Montana,
Alaska. They've had bones coming from Alaska where they've had red blood cells. They're discovering, as I understand, and I'm not really up to it, not as much as Mike, but I understand they're finding it in a lot more bones than originally thought. What's his name? The guy with the microscope.
Jack Horner?
No.
Microscope.
Anyway, the electron microscope guy that's been in Mark Armitage.
Oh, Mark Armitage.
He's found this sort of stuff in dinosaur bones as well. Where do they come from? Do you know?
That's yeah, well, the Creation Research Society went out to Glendive, Montana, and got the horn of a triceratops, a big one, and, you know, and analyzed it. And it had soft tissue in it, and it had what's called these soft bone cells that they weren't fossilized. So we're doing our own soft tissue research. But I hear by the grapevine, since I live in the very area where this research is occurring, that they're finding soft tissue fairly frequently. But it's mostly kind of by the grapevine right now. Some of the reports are getting out by Mary Schweitzer, but there's a lot of it, I believe, that's really there.
It's actually interesting. There's videos on YouTube by Mary Schweitzer and of her, and some of those are very interesting reporting what she's found. Okay, so how are we doing? Are we doing all right?
One more question here.
So this lady here.
Wondering what was the biggest bone that was ever found. I mean, they say they were so big, maybe they weren't.
Well, you saw the bone alongside that man that was standing. But there's I think Sue, isn't it? Sue is one of the largest ones that have been found.
The T-Rexes.
Yeah.
but they're finding big sauropods in Argentina as well as in the Rocky Mountain states of Utah especially. But there's nothing much bigger than those. They call them Seismosaurus or some Ultrasaurus. I mean, they got all kinds of saurus names for them, but they're essentially Apatosaurus or Diplodocus type animals. They're the biggest that I know of fossils.
Oh, how big are they? You've got Google? Have you got Google at home? My wife was teaching children, and she wanted to know the biggest one, so I Googled it, and you can... I can't remember offhand.
I'm guessing 100 feet long from the tip of the tail to the top of the head, as a guesstimate.
So there we go. So yeah. It's been good.
So seeing there's no more questions at this time, you're free to, of course, ask them during the break. Let me just wrap